Brilliant novels, groundbreaking nonfiction, evocative poetry, great books, and insightful conversations whenever you want them on the Talk of Iowa Book Club podcast. Pick the books that speak to you or read them all. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. The number of new cases in the U.S. thankfully continues to decline. Yesterday, a daily average of 146,000 over the past 7 days. That's down nearly 45% from the peak back in January, on January 8th. Well, getting millions of people vaccinated in order of priority is a huge logistical challenge for states. So today we're going to check in with reporters in several neighboring Midwest states. We'll ask how their vaccination campaigns are going and about other pandemic-related challenges. Midwest state pandemic checkup, so to speak. We'll be checking in with Wisconsin, Illinois, Nebraska, South Dakota, Minnesota in the course of the hour. But of course, let's start off right here at home in Iowa. Natalie Krebs, our health reporter here at Iowa Public Radio, joins me now. Hi, Natalie.
Hey, Ben.
Give us an overview of where we are right now with our vaccination campaign in the state.
Yeah, so currently the state is reporting they have administered 256,000 doses of the Pfizer and Moderna vaccine so far, about 61,000 people have completed both of those doses required of the Pfizer and Moderna vaccine. So that's about where we're sitting right now here in Iowa.
Yeah, I'm looking at the New York Times, a Knights database they have. So that puts us at 6.1% of our population roughly vaccinated right now. Monday was the first day of expanded eligibility for statewide COVID vaccine in Iowa. What did that mean?
Yeah, so Monday yesterday was the official start of phase 1B. So that means anyone over the age of 65 in Iowa, as well as tier one workers, which include school workers, K through 12 school workers, childcare workers, and first responders like police officers and firefighters, are able to get the vaccine. Obviously, we've been hearing a lot in the headlines. That's a huge group of people, and Iowa does not have nearly the number of vaccines allocated, you know, to reach that entire population.
Mm-hmm. And we have at the same time Iowa lowering the eligibility age to 65. What's the story behind that? There's some criticism, isn't there?
Yeah. And so originally, you know, Iowa came out, IDAC, its council that made up of health professionals that do the recommendations for Iowa phases. IDAC had recommended that people 75 and plus, you know, be under phase 1B. This was consistent with the CDC guidelines. 2 weeks ago, Governor Reynolds announced that would drop 65. This is something states around us have been doing. It was also consistent, you know, under the Trump administration, CDC under the Trump administration dropped that recommendation, which was sort of what set off, you know, this drop. But the criticism has been this, you know, opened up phase 1B to so many more thousands of people when, again, we just have this shortage of vaccine. We just don't have the supply to get to all these people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit more about the supply. Is there a chance we could get a dramatic uptick in supply? Will it be delved out just from what you know, just a little bit more every week? Or how is that working?
Well, health officials, you know, our state officials, health officials are, you know, remain optimistic that, you know, allocations will increase. Currently, Iowa numbers from the state last week said, you know, starting next week, the week of February 8th, the state is expected to get a little over 45,000 first doses of the vaccine. So again, we're looking at phase 1B, you know, tier one, that's people 65 mm-hmm. plus and these frontline workers, school teachers as well. That's over 600,000 people. So, you know, we're looking at quite a supply demand difference. You know, we're waiting. We're seeing week by week. Yeah. You know, the Biden administration is emphasizing, you know, increasing production. But, you know, we'll just have to wait and see.
Mm-hmm. And I believe you looked at how Polk County specifically, of course, where the capital is dealing with this supply versus demand issue. And so counties are working it out in different ways, strategizing?
Yeah. So, you know, Polk County has had a number of, you know, press releases. They had a small press conference on Friday, just basically trying to explain to people, you know, they're only getting 2,600 first doses of the vaccine this week. They've got, you know, 61,000 people just here in Polk County who are 65 plus, you know, just trying to let people know you're going to need to be patient. You know,
yeah,
we want to get you in.
Right.
Excuse me, but, you know, we don't have the number of vaccine available. And I've spoken to other health departments across the state, and they're handling it in different ways. You know, some smaller rural departments are literally just collecting names of people who qualify, putting them on the list, and sort of saying, we'll call you when we get the vaccine. Other people are just sort of first come, first serve. You know, they'll announce they have so many doses, and they'll fill up appointments. So
right,
really
right.
Varies.
Yeah, it's a patchwork of distribution. Just as we had with public policy regulations, masking, and just, keeping social distance. Before we say goodbye, I saw that the Iowa Department of Public Health added some new features to its coronavirus website yesterday, a dashboard on statewide data for the vaccine distribution, and a tool to help help find a vaccine provider location, right? I don't know if you had anything to add to that before we say goodbye.
Yeah, not too much. I mean, just, you know, you can see in real time the number of doses administered, number of people who've completed their second dose. One thing that is missing from that is we're still not getting the amount the state's been allocated, which, you know, that is available from the federal government. The state is not posting that number on their website. And then also, yes, you can go under there and find vaccine provider information. Again, vaccine supplies are short, so there are a lot of pharmacies and, you know, health offices, you know, doctor's offices that are ready but don't have the vaccine yet, just because there isn't enough to get there.
Okay, we'll get there hopefully sooner than expected, but we'll see. Natalie Krebs, IPR's health reporter, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ben.
Let's continue our hour-long Midwest pandemic state checkup, quickly surveying some Midwest states to see how our neighbors are doing during this vaccination campaign. Laurel White joins us now. Laurel is state capitol reporter with Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi there, Laurel.
Hi, Ben.
Tell us, what concerns people in Wisconsin most about this vaccine distribution where you are?
Well, there's been a lot of criticism from the Republican-controlled state legislature here over how our governor, Governor Tony Evers, who's a Democrat, and his administration have been doing vaccine rollout across the state. They say that, you know, the administration is kind of wrapped up in bureaucracy, too many layers to deciding who's eligible for the vaccine when. And they've also been pretty critical of just the supply chain, just how quickly from allocation to distribution we're moving in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. They say it's taking too long to get the doses to, you know, those healthcare providers to get shots in arms.
Looking at the New York Times database here, Wisconsin, 7.4% of your population in Wisconsin has been vaccinated there. I know the legislature there in Wisconsin has been having some legislation to do with COVID. What's been going on there relating to the rollout?
So, as I mentioned, you know, Republicans that have pretty substantial majorities in both chambers of our state legislature have been very vocal in their concerns. They've put forward a couple different bills that would change the rollout process. One of those passed the state assembly just last week, and it would actually require the state to open up doses to everyone by March 15th. That's something, obviously, if it made it through the state Senate and to our governor's desk, would very likely be vetoed. But they're really trying to kind of, you know, get their toe into this vaccine distribution process, the legislature is. And it's been a real push and pull between the administration and lawmakers.
Aside from the vaccination question, the legislature is also still dealing with the controversy over the mask mandate in your state. Tell us about that.
So our mask mandate is actually our final statewide measure aimed at curbing the spread of the virus. So everything else that our Democratic governor and his administration have tried to do statewide has been knocked down in the courts. Lawsuits brought from the legislature itself, other Republican groups. And what the legislature is trying to do now is actually pass a joint resolution, which is something that under state law allows them to override the governor's emergency declaration that enabled the mask mandate. So we're in the final stages of that process, kind of working itself out. The joint resolution has already passed the state Senate. It's pending before the state assembly. And if they move forward with doing that, which we think they may as soon as this week, will essentially be operating under a patchwork of local public health regulations in Wisconsin and no statewide directives during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. We know the science of this pandemic speaks to wearing masks and mask mandates. What are the arguments there in Wisconsin from those who are against mask mandates?
So the supporters of this joint resolution that would throw out the emergency declaration and the mask mandate say it's not really about masks. They say it's about the governor and his administration overstepping executive powers, doing more than they should be able to do in dictating, you know, people and businesses' actions across the state during the pandemic. So as of today, our governor has issued 5 different emergency declarations, all due to COVID-19, because our emergency declarations in Wisconsin expire after 60 days. Mm-hmm. So when those have expired, he keeps reissuing. Republican lawmakers say he shouldn't be able to just keep issuing declarations in perpetuity without any sort of buy-in from the legislature. So they say it's more about separation of powers and sort of balance of power, not overstepping executive authority, rather than the mask mandate itself.
Laurel, here in Iowa, quite a bit of controversy surrounding, school. We have a new 100% school, in-person school learning option here that was just signed into law last week. What about schools in Wisconsin? Controversy there, I have to believe, as well.
Absolutely. This is something that's really... It varies across the state, so districts are kind of left up to their own devices in terms of how they want to structure things, whether that's in person, partially virtual, all virtual. And we really kind of we see that patchwork clearly on display across the state. It just kind of depends on where you live. And one of the proposals that's been put forward, interestingly, by our Republican legislature is more restrictions on virtual schooling because they want to get kids back in the classroom as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. And essentially what it would do is require a local school board to vote every 14 days to continue virtual instruction and to have a 2/3 majority for that vote to go through. So basically school boards are going to have to continue going back and going back and going back every 14 days and voting, and taking any public feedback on that, if they want to continue, not in-person instruction.
Okay, Laurel White, State Capitol reporter with Wisconsin Public Radio. Laurel, thank you so much for taking the time to give us an update.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, next on our Midwest State Pandemic Checkup, we move to get a view from our neighbor, Illinois. Mary Hansen is with us, reporter with NPR Illinois, based in the capital, Springfield. Mary, welcome back to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
I want to look at some of your reporting here. Recently, you wrote about people struggling to get vaccine appointments in your county where you are. What have been the frictions there? Of course, prioritizing is one thing, the lack of vaccine supply, another one. What did you find out in your reporting?
Yeah, so similar to, problems that we're seeing throughout the country, there's a lot of issues with in Illinois and in our county specifically with the, with the vaccine signups, the appointments. They sort of appear on a website for a moment, and then they're all, snapped up almost immediately. So I talked to a couple of seniors over 65 who are, now eligible to get the vaccine under Illinois' plan, as well as some teachers who are, frontline essential workers who are also in this phase of the rollout. and some of their frustrations. And, you know, a lot of them said there's a sort of, you know, patchwork system of, you know, the health department has some appointments, as do a couple of pharmacies, you know, and some of the healthcare systems here, but there's no, you know, one place to get information or one place to try to sign up. Since that article came out, the Illinois State Public Health Department did launch a website, you know, that has all of the locations where people can sign up, the public locations where people can sign up for appointments. But again, people are finding that, you know, they log on and it'll say, you know, no appointments available, no appointments available.
What about nursing homes there? How has the rollout been in Illinois there?
Yeah, so it's been fairly slow as well. There's been a lot of criticism and sort of back and forth between the governor, Governor J.B. Pritzker, and the two, you know, federally contracted pharmacies, CVS and Walgreens, who are responsible for getting the vaccine into long-term care facilities and nursing homes, that's been a really slow rollout. You know, the pharmacies have said, well, it's the state health department's fault because they set the date for when we could actually get into some of these facilities. Mm-hmm. State health department disputed that for a while. So they're sort of in this, they were in this argument. It seems to sort of have settled down a bit, and the pharmacies have promised to get, you know, at least the first round of vaccines to all the facilities by the end of this month. So that's going a bit more slowly than people would like to see.
Illinois, of course, the Chicago area, a larger minority population, and that's been a discussion in the country. Minority populations more at risk, generally speaking. Their discussions there, they're being represented fairly in terms of vaccination, any different treatment?
Well, so there's a couple of different things happening here. I spoke with a group of healthcare workers, a coalition that represents statewide healthcare a group of healthcare providers from around the state, you know, saying that they felt like this first come first serve system of appointment sign up is really not an equitable system, that it, you know, sort of shuts out some seniors, some of the folks who are most vulnerable. You know, if they have Wi-Fi issues or you know, trouble with technology, they can't necessarily, you know, get those appointments, figure out when they should log on to the website, checking all these different websites, mm-hmm. that it's difficult for them, and that, you know, that can lead to issues. They're the ones that are supposed to be prioritized in this, you know, in this phase of the rollout. I did talk to a medical ethicist about this. He said, you know, we should be moving to more of a pre-registration or a lottery system where you can sort of go and sign up, and then somebody will assign you a time to sign up for an appointment, and that might be a better system. He did mention that, you know, the Chicago Health Department is trying to put more of these vaccination clinics in the south and west sides of Chicago, where there are, you know, a lot of communities of color and where, you know, the virus has been the worst. But he said he'd like to see that system more statewide.
Right. Remind us, because every state is different here, what's going on in Illinois in terms of rules surrounding, you know, behavior, masking in public places? Does that continue to be a controversy?
No, so Illinois has had a statewide mask mandate, I believe, since May, and there have been, you know, some grumbling, some pushback, that sort of thing. But really, that has kind of, fizzled out, and so we've continued on with the mask mandate. You know, we have had some statewide rules based on different regions for, you know, things like indoor dining and, you know, what types of businesses can be open. And those decisions have certainly, you know, been scrutinized, and the kind of data and trends that have been used to make those decisions. You know, Republicans in particular have been very critical of the Democratic governor for how he's made those decisions. But, you know, Illinois has sort of been on the more conservative end. We didn't have indoor dining for much of December and even into January. But as our numbers have improved, you know, daily cases and test positivity rate and hospitalizations have gone down pretty consistently in the last few weeks. The governor has loosened some of those restrictions in most parts of the state.
Okay. What about schools? Is there mostly a happy solution finding there in in Illinois for in-person versus virtual learning?
I'm not sure that anybody ever is happy with those decisions.
That's why I said mostly,
mostly. There is, again, similar to other states, it's, based school district by school district. So the state has, and the state health department has said, you know, we issued this guidance that this is how you can open safely. We're not going to tell you to open or that you have to open or close. But, you know, here's some data, some statistics, and some guidelines about how to do it safely. So it's really a district-by-district decision. Mm-hmm. Many of the larger school districts, I'm thinking Chicago in particular, have been remote only. But the city officials and school officials moved recently to try to open up to more in-person learning. They were supposed to do that Monday, but there's this big fight going on right now between the school and the school, the city, and the union. The union wants to continue with remote only learning. So there was, you know, threats of strikes and lockouts and things like that. They do seem to be closer to an agreement right now, but that I'll have to sort of keep an eye on.
Okay, just over a minute left before we have to take a break. Mary, what about the Illinois legislature there in Springfield? How has that been affecting the work of lawmakers?
Yeah, so they had a big lame duck session at the beginning of January, pushed a lot of landmark legislation through, including a big criminal justice reform bill. The state lawmakers, the House of Representatives met at the convention center to be sort of properly spaced out. And as you know, in that session, there was a transition of power. Speaker Madigan not reelected to that position, but a new speaker was elected, so a new sort of era in politics here. But in terms of COVID-19, after that session, after that couple-day session, there were a handful of positive cases our legislature. I don't believe it constituted as an outbreak, but they did cancel at least one day of session this month. The House of Representatives will be back and likely might vote on some legislation to allow them to, you know, work remotely, at least in committee for a bit. So we'll be keeping track of that, too.
Okay, Mary Hansen, thank you for the update. Stay safe. Be well. Mary Hansen, reporter with NPR Illinois, based in Springfield. Mary, take care.
Thanks, you too.
Going to take a short break and continue our Midwest state pandemic checkup. I'll talk after the break with Bill Kelly with NET News in Nebraska. Then we'll go to South Dakota and finish up with Minnesota. Getting a handle on how the vaccination rollout is going in a few of our neighboring states. On this edition of River to River, I'm Ben Kiefer, back in just a few moments. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.
In a time like none of us have experienced before, there's strength to be found in community institutions like Iowa Public Radio. I'm Executive Director Myrna Johnson, and I'm so proud of the thoughtful, informed coverage IPR brings you on the issues that matter. Listener funding is the power source that makes it all possible. Facts, understanding, insight, that's what you fund when you give to this station. Make your gift now at iowapublicradio.org, and thank you.
And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. A sort of Midwest state pandemic checkup today on our program. Getting millions of people vaccinated in order of priority is a big logistical challenge for states. So this hour, we've been checking in with reporters in several Midwest states, how their vaccination campaigns are going, and talk to them about any other pandemic-related challenges in their states. If you were with us in the first half hour, we heard from Wisconsin, Illinois, in addition to Iowa. Coming up in a few minutes, the views from South Dakota and Minnesota. But before that, let's talk with Bill Kelly. He's a reporter with NET, Nebraska's public radio network. Bill, welcome back to the program.
It's nice to be here. Thanks, Ben.
So tell us, what are the biggest challenges your state is facing at the moment in this vaccination campaign?
The thing you hear most often, and I think this is echoed around the country, is just the supply chain, wishing more vaccine could be in hand and in arms around the state as quickly as possible. Nebraska has set up its tiered system, and the concentration is still on healthcare workers, nursing homes, and first responders. But the supplies arriving are still pretty paltry, in the hundreds, rather than being available at the kind of levels the public health professionals would like to see.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so in that first phase, winding up, as here in Iowa, we've been moving into the general population, the older Iowans. Is that similar in Nebraska? Are you at that transition point as well?
The concentration has been on nursing homes initially. There was just a rollout of a statewide registration system. There had been some county-level registrations already in place. But the state system goes through a process where they ask age. That's a priority. And also the pre-existing conditions or comorbidities, as they're called, the types of things that might put somebody at greater risk. And once you get through that questionnaire, then the computer, the databases do the shaking out, and notifications should be coming through after that. But again, it all gets down to not just having the name on the list, but whether there's a supply to get to it.
Right, right. I understand you've been interviewing doctors, nurses, pharmacists about this. So what did you find out in those conversations?
Yeah, this is part of a documentary we've been working on, and especially this past week, a hospital out in North Platte, Nebraska, Great Plains Medicine, it was really remarkable how emotional some of these folks were about the arrival of the vaccine. The two of the staff pharmacists at Great Plains just burst into tears in the middle of the interview, and because both they were so grateful to have the vaccine, but this has taken a real emotional toll on even the smallest hospitals in the state. One of the pharmacists just closed her eyes and said, "There has just been so much death," and that really underscores why this is so important for these hospitals, even the smallest ones, to get this vaccine in hand.
Wow, really moving. And you juxtapose the image you just gave us there of the medical personnel breaking into tears because of all the pressure. And those are sort of tears of joy, of relief that we're turning a corner now. Juxtapose that image, and I don't know if you're dealing with this in the documentary, Bill, with, you know, people refusing to wear masks, refusing to take it as seriously as it should be taken.
It is a really striking contrast. Nebraska just this past week moved to what they call the green level, which is the lowest level of concern, because it's based on hospitalizations. But there are still people getting sick, and there are still mask mandates in place in various places around the state. In western Nebraska, out in North Platte, where I just visited, there are very few masks, and it's uncomfortable sometimes when you're in a crowded restaurant and the like, because you know this so few people, only about 3% of the state has been vaccinated at this point, that this is a virus that's still very much in play.
Mm-hmm. And so very much the politics of the pandemic there in Nebraska reflect the more or less, this is an overgeneralization, but urban versus rural, your urban centers, Lincoln, Omaha, they are going to be different in terms of social distancing and masking than more western parts of the state?
Absolutely. Around November, a series of mask mandates were put in place, all at the local level. Governor Pete Ricketts elected not to try and implement a statewide mask mandate. His argument was that it only provokes resistance. But at the local level, Omaha, Lincoln, and even some smaller communities elected to embrace a mask mandate. Beyond, outside of those communities, you don't see a lot of mask use, and the social distancing is pretty spotty.
Mm-hmm. Is that reflected in the infection rates then? in the areas?
You know, in part, it's kind of difficult to tell because in western Nebraska, some of these counties are so small, it's difficult to put a trend number on it. But you have seen cases begin to decline in the Omahas and Lincolns and these other communities where the mask mandates have been in place. So there is a sense they have been successful and have pushed down the hospitalization rates.
Mm-hmm. I understand that when you've talked with these medical personnel, doctors and nurses and others, they're really making sure that none of this vaccine goes to waste. You have a story about that, I think.
Well, it's interesting, and this was I've heard this here, but also in talking with friends out of state, that there are people who are getting vaccine just because somebody called them up and said, you know, get down here. We're down to our last three or four doses out of a single bottle, and there's nobody else in line. And so if we don't use it today, it's not going to get used. And so that's I thought that was a pretty heartening that no matter what, even if you didn't necessarily meet all the criteria, they wanted to make sure that there was a vaccine put in an arm. So I think there's an understanding that when the supply is scarce, they want to make sure every dose is utilized.
Yes, of course. Bill Kelly, thank you very much for the update, the view from Nebraska. Bill Kelly, reporter with NET, Nebraska's public radio network. And Bill, for lunch today, or the next time you have a runza, think of me. I'm a native Nebraskan, actually born there.
Well, thank you. And pass along my greetings to Clay Masters, an alumni of NET. We miss him here.
All right, I will do. Bill Kelly, thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye for now.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, from Nebraska, let's head north to South Dakota, where we're in touch with Jackie Hendry, host of South Dakota Focus on South Dakota Public Broadcasting TV, also a former health and education reporter. Jackie, good to have you on the program again.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for having me back.
Well, let's talk about your infection rate now. Trends continuing to improve nationwide, and South Dakota has really had, in terms of public policy, I guess, a hands-off approach. How is your infection rate?
Well, I'll tell you what, since the last time we spoke, it's a very different situation here in a good way, I'm happy to say. The last time we talked, we were seeing anywhere from 800 to maybe 1,000 new confirmed cases of COVID-19 in a day, 300 to 400 people hospitalized on any given day. Mm-hmm. That's been trending downward. Now, I think today we saw just about 100 new cases, around 130 people currently hospitalized. Our ICU and ventilation use for COVID patients right now is at the lowest rate that it's been since that November peak we saw. And our last 7-day average of infection rates is now the lowest it's been since August.
That is amazing. What a wonderful bit of news you shared with us from South Dakota, Jackie. Let's talk about the vaccine that we were just hearing from Nebraska, that the medical personnel getting emotional about this vaccine rollout, that we can really see things changing now. And what is the vaccination campaign like in South Dakota?
Well, I can identify with those healthcare workers. We're seeing something similar here, and I'll be honest, I got a bit emotional getting to cover the vaccine arrival when that came to us a few months ago. You may have seen headlines a few weeks ago. South Dakota was actually maybe, I think, number two or maybe top state in the nation for that initial vaccine rollout once we got those initial shipments. The last time I checked the New York Times tracking of that, I think we're in 12th place now in the nation.
Yep. Yes.
But still doing quite well. 8.7% of South Dakotans have at least one dose. 3.5% have the full circuit of two doses. And our health department said last week that they're expecting our weekly allotment to bump up a little bit this week. So I think about 95% of nursing home residents in that first wave of vaccinations have taken advantage of that, 65% of healthcare workers. And it sounds like we're making positive movement on the vaccination front.
Right. I've been looking at the same New York Times database that you have, evidently, and South Dakota doing wonderfully within that top 10 or 12 in terms of the percent of population with at least one dose. Iowa further back in the pack, we have about 6.1% of our population with at least one dose there. What else has been going on COVID-related that you've been have your eyes on there, Jackie, in South Dakota?
Right. Well, you know, in the good news of it seems like infection rates are down. An interesting point, it seems more and more likely that that's happening because so many people have already had COVID. Looking at two models, a CDC model and a Columbia University model, estimate anywhere from 36% of South Dakotans all the way up to, on the high end, potentially 60% of South Dakotans at this point have already had COVID-19. And that's based on this idea that for every confirmed case of COVID, there could be 3 to 5 other people that have also been infected who maybe didn't have symptoms, didn't get tested, don't know they have it. I just happened to be visiting with a farmer about 20 miles west of Sioux Falls last week for a different project, and he talked about it's a family operation. The virus wiped through a bunch of his coworkers in the early days of the pandemic. Luckily, everyone recovered, seemed to be fine, and he thought, wow, I really got lucky. I never had it. And then he happened to go in, get an antigen test, and realized, oh, it looks like I did have it at some point, and I didn't even realize it. So I think we're going to find out that even as high as our infection rate was in the fall, it was probably a lot higher than we really know.
Right. And South Dakota, of course, from past months of news, known for no lockdowns, no statewide policies, no masks required in the Capitol. Before we go, we have about a minute left. Tell us, Jackie, South Dakota, of course, with a number of tribal areas. What is the picture there?
Right. And it's a good question. The Indian Health Service at the federal level is responsible for the vaccine rollout in tribal communities. So those numbers that I shared with you, that percentage that the New York Times, I'm pretty sure, is working off of, that doesn't necessarily include our tribal communities. That's handled by IHS. And I don't have a firm number. I know for the Great Plains area, that includes both Dakotas, Iowa, Nebraska, and a few other spaces. There's a total of over 31,000 vaccine doses for IHS facilities in that whole area of multiple states. I'm not exactly sure how it's rolling out in our tribal communities, but that's something that we're going to continue to watch.
Okay, Jackie Hendry, host of South Dakota Focus on South Dakota Public Broadcasting TV. Jackie, always good to speak with you. Thank you for taking the time to give us an update from South Dakota.
Thanks so much, Ben. Take care.
You too. And to finish up this survey of Midwestern states, a coronavirus survey of Midwest states, our neighbors, let's talk with Catherine Richard, senior reporter with Minnesota Public Radio. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Ben.
Hi. We have just over 5 minutes to get an update from you. What's the latest COVID data in Minnesota? You're trending down, hopefully, as well as the nation is?
Yeah, that's exactly what we're seeing. We have about 600 new cases today, which is actually very low compared to recent weeks, 8 deaths. And meanwhile, 447,000 plus people have gotten that first shot of the vaccine. So both the trend lines are moving in the right direction right now.
Mm-hmm. What have you been covering related to the vaccine campaign?
Really, all aspects of it. Generally speaking, we have been focusing on the logistics, but also equity and access, right? You know, who's able to get the vaccine easily and quickly right now? Who's having a harder time? In the beginning, the campaign, as in most states, was pretty contained to, you know, hospital workers, frontline workers, as well as people living in long-term care. But the state, in response to a lot of changing federal guidance, has really been shifting the goalposts recently, adding people 65 and older, for instance, teachers, some teachers, not all teachers, some child care providers, not all child care providers. So it really has been a moving target almost on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. And Minnesotans, generally everywhere you go, eager to be vaccinated. Remember early when we talked about vaccines before they were even developed, we had a lot of vaccine skepticism in the country.
Yeah, you know, the state says they're not tracking that in like a very meaningful way, but anecdotally, we're hearing that it's a little bit all over the map. So I'll give you a couple of examples. I'm based in Rochester, Minnesota, which is home of Mayo Clinic. Mm-hmm. As you can imagine, there are a lot of healthcare workers here, all of whom were, you know, if not at the front of the line, then pretty close to the front to get their vaccine. You know, uptake here has been quite good based on the numbers I've seen. In other parts of the state, we're hearing that it's not as good. You know, even those frontline workers or EMTs, people in, you know, public safety who are able to get it early on, turning it down, but then coming back a couple weeks later and saying, okay, so I have five friends who got it. They're okay. I'll take it after all. Mm. So it's and really, I think in sort of the metro areas with the large hospital systems, you're seeing a higher uptake, but in some of the rural parts of the state, we're hearing anecdotally that it hasn't been as high as maybe they would like it, but that people are also coming back to ask for it at a later date.
That's interesting, and that makes sense, that you would then look at your closest group of friends and see how they did, and that would give you some reassurance.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. You've also been covering, Catherine, how hospitals are really having a tough task here, tough tasks juggling logistics, scheduling, training these frontline healthcare workers. What did you find out in covering that?
Yeah, well, in Minnesota, the hospitals, and we have a lot of large hospitals, are what they're calling the hubs of this distribution plan. So they were really the first places to get the Pfizer vaccine because they had the ability to store it in cold storage. There are enough around the state where, you know, there would be a hub nearby to keep that vaccine, and then they could trot it out to more rural locations if they needed to. But in the process of doing that, what we found is that a lot of hospitals in Minnesota have actually been vaccinating staff members, employees that don't necessarily fit the profile of the person that the state or the federal government was envisioning would get the vaccine first. I'll, again, use my hometown example here. Mayo Clinic is among the hospitals that's been doing that. They say they've been following state and federal guidance, which they say has been changing a lot. It's been hard to keep up. But we learned that they were vaccinating, for instance, employees who work at the employee gym, which has been closed for a year. They've been offering vaccines to people who telework, even though the state says that they should not be getting them right now. And again, this is something we've seen not only throughout Minnesota at other hospital systems, but throughout the country. So it seems like if you had the advantage of just happening to work for a hospital, you are more likely to get it earlier than, say, someone who's living in long-term care or a dentist. They've been, you know, pretty vocal in their frustration with the rollout plan. You know, you had dentists, eye doctors, retail pharmacists who were not getting any communication about how they would get the vaccine. And they're saying, look, you know, we're in face-to-face contact with people every single day and really wanted it. So it's been a point of contention there.
Yeah, I can certainly believe that. A quick word about schools in Minnesota, in-person versus virtual learning. How has that been trending lately?
We're seeing more schools move towards some sort of in-person learning model as cases go down. Now, a big change the state made a few weeks ago was to say that schools didn't have to look at community spread anymore when deciding whether they would remain open or not. That was a change from the fall, where that was a major metric in making those decisions. But again, it's all over the map. You know, you have some districts that are you know, moving quickly towards full in-person learning across the board. You have other districts that are still in hybrid or hybrid only for elementary school students. So there really is no statewide plan there. It's on a district-by-district level.
Right. And it's so good to hear nationwide, pretty much the trend is down in terms of infections, hospitalizations, and so forth. And Catherine, as we've been surveying other Midwest states this hour, one common theme has been sort of the emotion connected with pulling ourselves out of this pandemic, turning the corner slowly, not without some bureaucratic problems or logistical problems, I should say, in getting these vaccines out and the supply. But the emotional side, have you been covering that? Have you been hearing about that in Minnesota as well?
Absolutely. I feel like I've made it my goal to do stories that get beyond the numbers as much as I possibly can. Just to give an example, I spent New Year's Eve in the ICU, COVID ICU. And, you know, among the many things that I heard there, talking to healthcare providers who are in tears, was hope, frankly. You know, they had all gotten their first shots at that point. They were really hopeful by this time next year, they wouldn't be really doing that job anymore. They'd be taking care of other critically ill patients. And I heard the last reporter talk about getting a little emotional seeing some of those first vaccines being given. I had the same exact experience too. And I've been grateful that the elderly folks in my life who are at higher risk have been able to get their shots so far. So that's really good news.
Catherine Richert, let's stay emotional, positive in the right way, and continue with these upswing and positive developments on our pandemic front. Catherine Richert is senior reporter with Minnesota Public Radio. Thank you for joining us from Rochester, Catherine.
Thank you for having me.
Well, that wraps up our survey of Midwest states, learning a little bit how different it can be in this vaccine rollout. Tomorrow, it's a Politics Wednesday. Political scientists Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College, Jim McCormick of Iowa State University will be looking at domestic politics. Of course, that trial coming up in the Senate next week, but also we'll be looking abroad and asking how much are the protests in Russia a threat to Putin. That's tomorrow on the program. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.
Iowa Republican leaders encourage wearing a mask at the Capitol, but oppose making it a mandate.
We have no way to enforce that, even if we were to say everyone in the caucus has to have a mask.
This worries Democratic leaders.
I'm concerned and want to avoid, you know, turning the legislature into a super spreader event.
Legislative leaders share their goals and concerns, and so does the governor on the podcast Under the Golden Dome. Listen to the new episode now at iowapublicradio.org.